Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic.
Thanks, Tim.
All right, so we're on second part of Two Employers. Bottom of the page of 143. Last two lines of 143. Who is Two Employers written by?
Hank Parker.
Thank you. Very right. Yes. Yeah, you have to write it down and be able to read your scribble, right? Excellent. Right. The Unbeliever. Very good. Where can we read The Unbeliever? You can read it in the first edition, absolutely. You can also read it in the supplemental book, Experience, Strength, and Hope, which has every, because he went out. They pulled. Not every story's been pulled out because there was an issue. Some, they're just a redundant message, and maybe another message is better, and they're making room and updating. Because any changes on the stories, the primary reason for change was to help with identification with whomever new is coming in. So as our membership has changed, so have our stories. So Experience, Strength, and Hope, you can read The Unbeliever. And he did end up drinking after the book was published. Had a whole host of resentments, which I think fed into that. So that's a good reason to do a fourth step, right?
Right.
So, to return to the subject matter of this book, it contains full suggestions by which the employee may solve his problem. To you, some of the ideas which it contains are novel. Perhaps you are not quite in sympathy with the approach we suggest. By no means do we offer it as the last word on this subject. But so far as we are concerned, it has worked with us. After all, are you not looking for results rather than methods? Whether your employee likes it or not, he will learn the grim truth about alcoholism. That won't hurt him a bit, even though he does not go for this remedy. We suggest you draw the book to the attention of the doctor who is to attend your patient during treatment. If the book is read the moment the patient is able, while acutely depressed, realization of his condition may come to him. Why? He's at his bottom. Higher chance in hopelessness that the channel is open, the ego is out of the way enough that the message can penetrate, right? So the question is, do we wait for the person to get well to do the steps, or do you do the steps to get well? Based on that line, and there's many references to it, you nail the person as early as possible. While acutely depressed.
Kick him when he's down.
Kick him when he's down. That's when he's more apt to accept the kick willingly. After DWI, once you get your driver's license back, I'm not writing that thing. I'm not doing that thing. I'm good. I'm going back to work. My wife let me back in. I'm good. We hope the doctor will tell the patient the truth about his condition, whatever that happens to be. When the man is presented with this volume, it is best that no one tell him he must abide by its suggestions. The man must decide for himself. You are betting, of course, that your changed attitude plus the contents of this book will turn the trick. In some cases it will, and in others it may not. But we think that if you persevere, the percentage of successes will gratify you. As our work spreads and our numbers increase, we hope your employees may be put in personal contact with some of us. Meanwhile, we are sure a great deal can be accomplished by the use of the book alone. So initially when the book was printed, they were like, well, I don't know. Doesn't it really have to be that an alcoholic is standing right in front of you? It doesn't have to be a Bill Wilson to a Bob Smith situation. They didn't know what the answer to that was. So when they were shipping out the book, somebody says, oh, yeah, I'm in Baduk. I don't know any alcoholics that are sober. Do me a favor. Send me a book. They didn't know what the result was going to be on that. They didn't know if somebody was going to be struck sober. Who was the first person to report back that they got sober off of the text? Pat Cooper lived in San Francisco. His mother got a hold of the manuscript and somehow got it to her son. I guess she got it from a doctor. She read it, gave it to her son. Son was struck sober. His story's in the first edition, first printing only. Because his story is the lone endeavor, and hence in the title, he's out there all by himself, the lone endeavor. And he actually happened to work in a psychiatric hospital. And as soon as he got struck sober, he realized there's a lot of alcoholics in here. It's not just mental stuff. And he started working with other alcoholics and was getting some traction. So they hear this back in New York, and they say, "Holy crap! The first person got sober off the book. Send his ass out here immediately." So, the bus brings him into, Port Authority. I don't know. Bring him to Port Authority. Everybody gets off the bus, and no Pat Cooper comes off the bus. They're like, "Where the hell's Pat Cooper?" And they go to the driver. Anybody else in there? "Oh, yeah, there's one guy. He's drunk. He's in the back." So he got drunk on the ride there. But when he was working with alcoholics, it was good, right? He left him to his own devices, and it screwed up the whole thing. So his story made the first edition, first printing, not the second printing. Lone Endeavor. Where is it? Experience, Strength, and Hope. You can read it. On your employee's return, talk with him. Ask him if he thinks he has the answer. If he feels free to discuss his problems with you. If he knows you understand and will not be upset by anything he wishes to say, he will probably be off to a fast start. In this connection, can you remain undisturbed if the man proceeds to tell you shocking things? He may, for example, reveal that he has padded his expense account or that he has planned to take your best customers away from you. In fact, he may say almost anything if he has accepted our solution, the steps, right? If he has accepted our solution, which, as you know, demands rigorous honesty. Can you charge this off as you would a bad account and start fresh with him? If he owes you money, you may wish to make terms. If he speaks of his home situation, you can undoubtedly make helpful suggestions. Can he talk frankly with you so long as he does not bear business tales or criticize his associates? With this kind of employee, such an attitude will command undying loyalty. Let's hear some character defects. The greatest enemies of us alcoholics are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. Wherever men are gathered together in business, there will be rivalries, and arising out of these, a certain amount of office politics. Sometimes we alcoholics have an idea that people are trying to pull us down. Often this is not so at all. But sometimes our drinking will be used politically. So our first example of that was Bill Dotson, AA number 3. He, as we saw in our reading, was an attorney, but he was also running for city council at the time. So he gets out of detox, gets struck sober, he's on fire, he's making speeches, he's running for city council. His opponent did bring up his drinking history. One instance comes to mind in which a malicious individual was always making friendly little jokes about an alcoholic's drinking exploits. In this way, he was slyly carrying tales. In another case, an alcoholic was sent to a hospital for treatment. Only a few knew of it at first, but within a short time, it was billboarded throughout the entire company. Naturally, this sort of thing decreased the man's chance of recovery. The employer can many times protect the victim from this kind of talk. The employer cannot play favorites, but he can always defend a man from needless provocation and unfair criticism. As a class, alcoholics are energetic people. They work hard and they play hard. Your man should be on his mettle to make good. Being somewhat weakened and faced with physical and mental readjustment to a life which knows no alcohol, he may overdo. You may have to curb his desire to work 16 hours a day. You may need to encourage him to play once in a while. He may wish to do a lot for other alcoholics, and something of the sort may come up during business hours. A reasonable amount of latitude will be helpful. I underline this. This work is necessary to maintain his sobriety. Doesn't say anything else is necessary, although they're all ingredients to the pie. But the fact of the matter is they're going out of their way saying to maintain sobriety is only making sure you're doing step 12. You got to keep your side of the street clean, 1 through 11, but how do you stay sober 87 years? Good 12-step work. In case it's a mystery to anybody, like, you know, do I go to a lot of meetings? Maybe, because that's where you're going to find the new alcoholic, right? But what's really, strip the onion back one more level. What is it? It's working with another alcoholic, right? After your man has gone along without drinking for a few months, you may be able to make use of his services with other employees who are giving you the alcoholic runaround. Provided, of course, they are willing to have a third party in the picture. An alcoholic who has recovered but holds a relatively unimportant job can talk to a man with a better position. Being on a radically different basis of life, he will never take advantage of the situation. So what's that? That's the psychic change. That's transcendence, right? Looking at the world in a completely different way. Not what I can get out of life, what can I give to it? What can I give to the other alcoholic? Your man may be trusted. Long experience with alcoholic excuses naturally arouses suspicion. When his wife next calls saying he is sick, you might jump to the conclusion he is drunk. If he is and is still trying to recover, he will tell you about it even if it means the loss of his job. For he knows he must be honest if he would live at all. He will appreciate knowing you are not bothering your head about him, that you are not suspicious, nor are you trying to run his life, so he will be shielded from temptation to drink. If he is conscientiously following the program of recovery, he can go anywhere your business may call him. In case he does stumble, even once, you will have to decide whether to let him go. If you are sure he doesn't mean business, there is no doubt you should discharge him. That might be good information to a sponsor too, right? So your guy's trying, he's slipping, and then it comes to you intuitively, almost it's a God thing, this guy's not really even serious. Maybe dropping the guy, stepping back from the thing, for the guy maybe to get some sort of motivation, some sort of grace from just not thinking he's got a sponsor, that just things keep going as, you know, definition of insanity is for the same thing to happen over and over again and expect a different result, right? If, on the contrary, you are sure he is doing his utmost, you may wish to give him another chance. But you should feel under no obligation to keep him on, for your obligation has been well discharged already. There is another thing you might wish to do. If your organization is a large one, your junior executives might be provided with this book. Wow, what a great sales technique. Get the whole company to buy your book. You might let them know you have no quarrel with the alcoholics of your organization. These juniors are often in a difficult position. Men under them are frequently their friends. So, for one reason or another, they cover for these men, hoping matters will take a turn for the better. They often jeopardize their own positions by trying to help serious drinkers who should have been fired long ago, or else given an opportunity to get well. So it's sort of a black and white thing. Either you're out, or we present you with the solution and you either take it or you don't. And then if you don't, you're out again. So after reading this book, a junior executive can go to such a man and say approximately this: look here, Ed, do you want to stop drinking or not? You put me on the spot every time you get drunk. It isn't fair to me or the firm. I have been learning something about alcoholism. If you are an alcoholic, you are a mighty sick man. You act like one. The firm wants to help you get over it. And if you are interested, there is a way out. If you take it, your past will be forgotten, and the fact that you went away for treatment will not be mentioned. But if you cannot or will not stop drinking, I think you ought to resign. And I like that last line on the last page. There is a way out. Where do we see that before? That was almost the name of our book, right? And why did it not end up the name of our book? Because Fitz Mayo, our southern friend, was down in Washington. He's the founder of AA Washington. He was asked, Bill said, do me a favor, go over to the Library of Congress and see how many books are named The Way and The Way Out. We're thinking about that for the name of our book. And there were 12. And that would have made ours 13. Wasn't going to happen. Your junior executive may not agree with the contents of our book. He need not, and often should not, show it to his alcoholic prospect. But at least he will understand the problem and will no longer be misled by ordinary promises. He will be able to take a position with such a man which is eminently fair and square. He will have no further reason for covering up for an alcoholic employee. It boils right down to this. No man should be fired just because he is an alcoholic. If he wants to stop, he should be afforded a real chance. So I think the definition of real there is our solution, that meaning the psychic change. And the purpose of the steps are to elicit that, right? It's the recipe to make the cake, and in there, hopefully you have the transformation, the conversion. If he cannot or does not want to stop, he should be discharged. The exceptions are few. We think this method of approach will accomplish several things. It will permit the rehabilitation of good men. That's one. At the same time, you will feel no reluctance to rid yourself of those who cannot or will not stop. That's two. And thirdly, alcoholism may be causing your organization considerable damage in its waste of time, men, and reputation. We hope our suggestions will help you plug up this sometimes serious leak. We think we are sensible when we urge that you stop this waste and give your worthwhile man a chance. The other day, an approach was made to the vice president of a large industrial concern. He remarked, I'm mighty glad you fellows got over your drinking, but the policy of this company is not to interfere with the habits of our employees. If a man drinks so much that his job suffers, we fire him. I don't see how you can be of any help to us, for, as you see, we don't have any alcoholic problem. This same company spends millions for research every year. Their cost of production is figured to a fine decimal point. They have recreational facilities. There is company insurance. There is a real interest, both humanitarian and business, in the well-being of employees. But alcoholism? Well, they just don't believe they have it. Perhaps this is a typical attitude. We, who have collectively seen a great deal of business life, at least from the alcoholic angle, had to smile at this gentleman's sincere opinion. He might be shocked if he knew how much alcoholism is costing his organization a year. That company may harbor many actual or potential alcoholics. We believe that managers of large enterprises often have little idea how prevalent this problem is. Even if you feel your organization has no alcoholic problem, it might pay to take another look down the line. You may make some interesting discoveries. Of course, this chapter refers to alcoholics, sick people, deranged men. What our friend, the vice president, had in mind was the habitual or whoopee drinker. What did we have that called prior in the book? Was the moderate drinker or the hard drinker, right? They're screwing up, fire them. We're agreeing with that. But we're saying that you have to hear what we're trying to teach with regards to the real alcoholic, that it's an illness and that they need to be given a chance to try the solution. If they don't pick up the spiritual kit, fire them too. But we do need to distinguish between the moderate, the hard drinker, and the alcoholic. As to them, his policy is undoubtedly sound, but he did not distinguish between such people and the alcoholic. I probably should have made my comments after that sentence, right? It is not to be expected that an alcoholic employee will receive a disproportionate amount of time and attention. He should not be made a favorite. The right kind of man, the kind who recovers, will not want this sort of thing. He will not impose. Far from it. He will work like the devil and thank you to his dying day. Today, I own a little company. There are two alcoholic employees who produce as much as five normal salesmen. So that's Bill Wilson and Jimmy Burwell, A Vicious Cycle. Jimmy Burwell is responsible for God as we understood him in steps 3 and 11. And he's also the first person prior to the traditions being written and accepted into the fellowship. He's responsible for the third tradition in highlighting it. So he always was an atheist, or at least an agnostic, but let's just call him an atheist for the sake of argument for a moment. There was a vote. He slipped, and they said, "You're out. You don't believe in this whole God thing? We're voting you out." And he said, "Wait a minute. Let's go to the forward to the first edition." There was only the first edition at the time. But he goes to the forward to the first edition, and he says, "Did you guys really mean it or not when you said..." Thank you. It's on XIV, Roman numeral 14. "The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Did you guys mean that or not?" He pulled the book off the shelf. And they go, "All right, yeah, we meant it." So, all right, you're in. You're back in. But he never became a deity guy. You know, he had some sort of spiritual thing, I guess. And I love what Bill says in from pages 53 to 55. No matter what you describe your situation from a spiritual standpoint, even if you say I'm an atheist or an agnostic, read pages 53 to 55. He actually says that's a form of spiritual path too. So, like, you're in it too, even though you think you're not. I like that. But why not? They have a new attitude, and they have been saved from a living death. I have enjoyed every moment spent in getting them straightened out. And note, and then it's just to see appendix 6. All right, we're going to stop there tonight.